From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Here are today's current sports headlines on this Monday, September 23rd, 2013. MSU football. Well, Notre Dame took advantage of a trick play that backfired, as well as four pass interference calls and a holding penalty that kept drives alive to defeat Michigan State for the third straight time. Now, the mistakes led to all of Notre Dame's points in the 17-13 victory. So many defensive pass interference calls in one game. D'Antonio said afterwards that, quote, "I've been coaching 30-plus years. No, never have I seen as many pass interference calls that were called on Saturday's game." And he goes on to say, "I guess that's where we should stop." Now, the Spartans entered with the nation's number one defense, allowing 50 yards a game rushing and 127 passing. Michigan State's defense also scored four touchdowns, which is also how many it had allowed. Now, they stopped the Irish on the ground, holding them to 82 yards and limited Tommy Reese to a season low 142 yards passing, but it wasn't enough. There was also a questionable decision to put in senior quarterback Andrew Maxwell on the potential game-winning drive instead of sticking with Connor Cook. Now, the Spartans now have a bye week before taking on Iowa. Now, in U of M football, Desmond Morgan's one-handed interception in the fourth quarter swung the game Michigan's way, and the 15th-ranked Wolverines dodged another potentially embarrassing loss with a 24-21 victory against UConn on Saturday night. Now, quarterback Devin Gardner, he turned the ball over three times for Michigan, and the Wolverines also muffed a punt inside their 10 that led to a UConn touchdown. Now, Fitzgerald Toussaint carried the offense with a season-high 120 yards and two touchdowns on 24 carries. Now, Gardner was 13 for 25 for 111 yards. The Wolverines will go into their off week undefeated, but not satisfied with their overall performance. Quote, "We're Michigan. We don't play to everyone else's level, and for the last 2 weeks we have, but we're going to step it up." That's from defensive end Frank Clark. And Brady Hoke, head coach, said, quote, "We've got a major league problem, and we've got to fix it because that's not going to win championships." All right, the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions have ended 74 years, yes, 74 years of road failure against the Washington Redskins. They topped the Skins 27-20, handing the Skins their third straight loss. The Skins are now 0-3 for the first time since 2001. Now, the Lions last beat the Redskins away from home in 1939, a 21-game streak that comes to a halt as the second longest in NFL history. Now, Nate Burleson had a breakout game for the Lions with six receptions for 116 yards. And Megatron, yes, Calvin Johnson, was also spectacular with seven receptions for 115 yards and a touchdown. Now, he tied Herman Moore for the franchise record with 34 100-yard receiving games. Matthew Stafford was 25 for 42 for 385 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception. RG3, Robert Griffin III, completed 32 of 50 passes for 326 yards and had his fourth interception of the season, one shy of his total from all of 2012. Now, Lions defensive tackle Jason Jones ruptured his left patella tendon in the second quarter and is out for the year, and running back Reggie Bush missed the game with a left knee injury. The Detroit Tigers win the weekend series against the Chicago White Sox 2-1 over the weekend, but they missed an opportunity to clinch at home yesterday, losing to the Sox 6-3. Now, Detroit needed a win and a Cleveland loss to wrap up the division Sunday, and neither happened, so the Tigers' magic number for the AL Central Championship remains at 2 at the start of a 6-game road trip. Now, one thing is certain. Detroit's season will not be over after 162 games. The loss by Texas and Kansas City on Sunday means the worst the Tigers can do is finish in a tie for a wild card spot. Now, yesterday, Anibal Sanchez yielded 4 runs and 8 hits in 5 innings, taking his first loss since July 19th. Prince Fielder homer for the Tigers. Detroit was without slugger Miguel Cabrera, who has been bothered by groin soreness. Cabrera said he hopes he can play Monday. Now, Detroit plays Minnesota tonight with right-handed pitcher Justin Verlander taking on right-handed pitcher Mike Pelfrey. A's and Braves clinch. Yes, the Atlanta Braves wrapped up the NL East crown and then rode two homers by Andrelton Simmons to a 5-2 victory over the Chicago Cubs. And Coco Crisp hit a 3-run homer. And Derek Bartolin and Jed Lowry each had a solo shot. And the A's wrapped up their second straight AL West title while overpowering the Minnesota Twins 11-7 Sunday. FedEx Cup. Henrik Stenson wins the FedEx Cup. He walked away with $11.44 million and $10 million for the FedEx Cup. That's $9 million of that in cash and $1.44 million for winning the Tour Championship. Stenson went on to say, quote, "It shows that I never give up. This is way beyond what I could have imagined." Now, not even among the top 200 players in the world 2 years ago, Stenson capped off the best 3 months of his career with a command performance Sunday in the Tour Championship with a birdie and a late charge by Jordan Spieth, followed by three pars from the sand. The 37-year-old Swede closed with a 2-under 68 on Sunday for a three-shot victory to capture the FedEx Cup. Now, Tiger Woods wrapped up the PGA of America's points-based award for Player of the Year, and he captured the PGA Tour Money title and the Vardin Trophy for the lowest adjusted scoring title. Next up is a vote of the players for PGA Tour Player of the Year. Now, he is a heavy favorite with 5 wins this year. The award will be announced on Friday. Well, those are your sports headlines, current sports headlines for September 23rd, 2013. So, yes, tons of weekend action. If you have any thoughts on any of those, you know, you can give us a call right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We want to hear what's on your mind on what you saw this weekend that you just need to get off your chest. Well, we definitely want to hear your thoughts on that Michigan State-Notre Dame game on Saturday afternoon at the Spartans Field to the Fighting Irish, 17-13. Again, 517-355-9527. And today to kick off the show, I invite a man who saw that loss firsthand. He is a sports writer for the Lansing State Journal and a friend of Current Sports, Brian Callaway. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, bud? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. So, Brian, let's dig right into it, man. What were your impressions of that game for Michigan State?
Well, I mean, they were right there in that game. I mean, take away, you know, a couple of pass interference things, or if, you know, chances in the red zone and they convert touchdowns there, and you're seeing a different story. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they were right there in that game for their first, you know, big road test of the season, and really big first test of the season, right there, and just, you know, a couple of things didn't go their way. But, I mean, it's an encouraging sign that they're right there and were able to hang with a team like Notre Dame on the road.
Now, Brian, I gotta talk about this because this is the moment that is really sparking a lot of controversy since Saturday. Now, the decision to put in Andrew Maxwell on that last drive of the game. Now, how did Mark D'Antonio justify that after the game in the presser?
Well, I mean, he just felt like, you know, he needed to give Andrew a chance at that point, which was an interesting comment, just, you know, considering that Andrew hadn't played the whole game and been on the bench cold, and all of a sudden you're going to throw him in the game to lead you on a drive where you need a touchdown. So it was a very interesting decision, but and he stuck by it. You know, he had to do it again on Sunday during his press conference to Sam Weiss, saying, you know, he still stood by that decision to put in Andrew Maxwell there. But like you said, it was a very interesting decision just because, you know, Andrew hadn't played the whole game, and they put him in cold, and it really was a, you know, no-win situation there because, yeah. I mean, really didn't set Andrew Maxwell up to succeed. And then also, you know, you kind of frustrate Connor Cook, who is the guy, if you say he's your starting quarterback, and you kick him out for, you know, what's the most important drive of the game. So it's sending a mixed message there.
Yeah, it definitely is. So, Brian, just looking at your perspective, do you think that was the right move?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, I think you've got to stay with Connor Cook in that situation. And, I mean, he's the one that's been playing all game for you, and you continue to go with him. I mean, you don't want him second-guessing himself in the future and ruining him just because of that decision that you made. I mean, it was just a very odd decision just to all of a sudden throw Maxwell in. I mean, if Connor Cook was hurt, that would be one thing. And do you think that Andrew Maxwell is your best guy in a two-minute situation? That's one thing. But, mm-hmm. I mean, Connor Cook wasn't hurt, and he could have, you know, gone in for that drive. So it was a very interesting decision. And also, you got to touch on the other decision that was the interesting decision was the decision to have R.J. Shelton throw that pass in the third quarter when they were driving down the field. I mean, they're moving the ball at ease on the ground, owning the line of scrimmage, and then all of a sudden you call that kind of play, and it obviously backfired. And, you know, Notre Dame didn't end up scoring the game winning, what proved to be the game-winning touchdown after that. So
Right. Without a doubt. Now, you know, another aspect of this is the pass interference calls. Now, you know, watching that game, Ryan, and, you know, a lot of those were called on Trey Wayans. And looking at those pass interference calls that were called on Trey, I don't know if those were legit interferences. What is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, like, you know, watched back some of the game yesterday, and I really thought that the last one in the end zone was the one that definitely should not have been called pass interference. I mean, looked like, you know, he had good position, you know, was looking towards the ball right there and when he was defending Corey Robinson. So I definitely thought that that one should not have been called, and I think that was a bad call. And, you know, the other ones are kind of questionable. You know, sometimes, you know, with Trey Wayans wasn't even looking at the ball in some instances. So the other ones were questionable, but I really didn't like that last one that was in the end zone, and I think that was the one that was helped Notre Dame score what proved to be the game-winning touchdown on that one.
Right. Totally agree with you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm sitting here talking with Brian Callaway. He's a sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Now, Brian, I got to ask you, as far as the Spartan fans who are sitting out there listening to this right now and looking at this game Saturday, how should Spartan fans feel about this loss? Is this an improvement from the first few games, or should Spartan fans be in panic mode?
Well, I mean, I think there's some of both. I mean, there's obviously a concern that this team is still not getting touchdowns in the red zone. It's an area that kind of plagued them last year in so many close losses, and then again came back to haunt them this year. I mean, in this game against Notre Dame with the 4-point loss, I mean, they were down in the red zone four times, only to get one touchdown. You get the two field goals, and then you have the missed field goal by Kevin Mumma on the first drive when you're set up in good field position. So that's something that really has to be corrected if this team is going to win in some of those close games. But like I said earlier, on the other hand, I mean, this is a team that played right there with Notre Dame on the road. The defense, you know, proved that, you know, lived up to the billing as the number one defense in the country, you know, shut down Notre Dame. You know, that was the fewest amount of yards that a Brian Kelly coached team at Notre Dame has had in the game. So that's
right.
I mean, Brian Kelly's an offensive minded guy, and to hold, you know, one of his offenses to their lowest production, I mean, that's a telling sign right there. So
yeah,
I mean, there's some pluses and minuses to take out of it, but I mean, they really need to now start getting touchdowns when they get into the red zone and not having to settle for field goals all the time.
Right, Brian, is that have to do a lot with play calling? When you get to the red zone, they're not, like you said, they're not producing once they get to the red zone and score, and they're not producing. They're producing probably, you know, 3 points, but they're not getting six. Is that have to do with play calling?
Yeah, I mean, it can at times, and sometimes it can be have to do with execution. But I think on one of the drives they reached the red zone on Saturday, I think was the time they decided to go with a direct snap to Langford. And I mean, obviously they were moving the ball at ease, just running the ball normally. And then, you know, when you have him back there taking a direct snap, you know, defense kind of knows what's coming. And I think that kind of killed one of those drives when they were in the red zone. So, I mean, I think it's a combination of both, you know, maybe a throw not being made correctly. And then also, you know, some of the play calls.
Right. And I want to ask, just really touch on this really quick. Now, Mumma, he after that missed field goal, Michael Geiger came out, right, who was a freshman. So that red shirt is now burned for him, right?
Yes, it is. And, you know, Michael Geiger came out, handled the extra point duties, and, you know, made two field goals in that game against Notre Dame, including, I think, a 45-yarder. And, you know, Kevin Mumma was still out there on kickoffs, but it's, you know, Michael Geiger's job now. And obviously, you know, they were in a tight battle in camp for the job, and Mumma won out, but he missed a field goal earlier on in the season as well, too. It was kind of a chip shot as well, too. But looks like, you know, Geiger, who was regarded as the number one kicker in the nation in this year's recruiting class, right? He's going to be the guy going forward, and we're interested to see what he has to do. You know, Antonio said after the game that he's going to have to grow up quick here.
Right, exactly. And you know, sticking with it as far as personnel changes go, I'm hearing that Jairus Jones, he's out 6 weeks, right? What exactly happened to him in that game? And also, what's the status of Isaiah Lewis?
Yeah, Jairus Jones with the MCL injury, and it's really a tough break for him. You know, each of the past 3 years, he's been injured here and missed some time. I think he missed six games in 2011, you know, missed some again last year. So really a tough break for a guy that's really battled injuries, you know, throughout his career here.
Isaiah Lewis, you know, had a little knee issue and had surgery, to clean it up on the Thursday before the Youngstown State game. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of limited him some. But obviously, you know, you saw him out there on Saturday, and, you know, D'Antonio praised him on his teleconference and called him a warrior, just, you know, what he's doing to be out there and trying to help this team win.
Right, right, exactly. All right, now, Brian, now, how crucial do you think this this upcoming Iowa game is coming up? If they lose, this seriously kind of throws a wrench in their quest to win the Legends, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. If you really look at the Big Ten this year and the Legends division specifically, I mean, it's really up for grabs, anyone's division. I mean, mm-hmm. Michigan and Nebraska were the ones perceived to be the favorites, and those teams look very beatable. I mean, Michigan struggled to beat Akron last week, and then again mm-hmm. This week struggling to beat Connecticut on the road, and then Nebraska, you know, with the problems with their defense. I mean, this is a very winnable division, and this is Iowa game. It's an important game for them just to go on the road and get off on a good foot. And I think, you know, this Iowa game looks like it could be the toughest one that they have, you know, in October. You also have, you know, Purdue at home, Indiana at home, and then I think they go to Illinois at the end of the month. So, I mean, this is a game that you definitely want to bounce back from and win and just kind of, you know, get some good momentum going as you start rolling through the Big Ten here.
Yeah, without a doubt. And also, you know, looking after that game, you know, Brian, like you said, if they lose against Iowa, I really think I think their legend shots are really, really gone. But you, like you said, I mean, everyone is beatable right now. And I got to ask you, how was the mood like after that game? You know, Notre Dame and Michigan State, a historic rivalry. How was the mood like after that game when D'Antonio walked in that press room?
You know, there was some frustration, and obviously, you know, looking at that point in time, he wasn't too happy about all the pass interference penalties. And, you know, I said that he'd never been involved in a game that had that many pass interference penalties called against his team. But at the same time, you know, he did see the positives, and there were some players that also did talk about the positives that, hey, all their goals are still in front of them. This wasn't a Big Ten game, so that doesn't affect, you know, them, their mission to get to Indianapolis. I think the big picture is that this game more so affected them from a national perspective, just because you know, they're facing a ranked team and had a chance to, you know, get a nice statement win. But once they get into the Big Ten play, only two Big Ten teams that are ranked right now that are on their schedule are Michigan and Northwestern. They don't play Ohio State and Wisconsin, the other two Big Ten ranked teams right now. So right. I mean, it was really a chance for them to kind of make a statement and, you know, beat a ranked team.
Right. So true. So true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm talking with Brian Callaway of LSJ. Brian, before I let you go, for our listeners that have never been to South Bend to Notre Dame Stadium, I saw you take a pic on the field on your Instagram. Really cool stuff. Talk about where that stadium ranks on your list of sports venues.
Well, I've been there once before this trip, just for a game, and I mean, I definitely think it's a must-see for any big fan of college football, or actually anyone in general. It's just a totally unique environment, and there's just so much history there in that stadium. I mean, you walk around the outside of the stadium, you see, you know, statues of Lou Holtz and some of their well-known coaches, and then, you know, obviously there's Touchdown Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of overlooks the stadium. It's just filled with a lot of history, and just kind of walking through that tunnel right there where just so much of that history has taken place, and, you know, with Notre Dame being one of the top college football programs of all time. So it's definitely a great environment to take in a college football game, and nice stadium, and, you know, kind of with the press boxes, you know, kind of makes you feel like you're so close to the field, a lot closer than you are at most places. So
really, where's the press box at?
Well, the press box isn't as high up as it is at Spartan Stadium.
Okay, I mean, gotcha.
So, I mean, you feel like it's kind of almost like you're at maybe a high school game from our perspective, and you're kind of taking in the game from that aspect. So, I mean, it's definitely a unique environment, and it's a must-see for anybody, you know, that's a huge college football fan. And our Chris Lowry had a great piece in Saturday's paper just about the whole mystique of Notre Dame and just the big deal that game days are around there with, you know, them having the pep rallies every Friday night before home games and all the things like that just around the football weekend at Notre Dame.
Yes, it is certainly one unique atmosphere, to say the least. I gotta head out there for one game, I tell you, one of these days, man. But all right, there you have it. Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. Brian, we'll be in touch. Thanks so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, well, there you have it. Well, what were your thoughts on that Michigan State-Notre Dame game? Did Coach D'Antonio make the right move in putting in Maxwell? Do you agree with the penalties that were called throughout the game? Is it panic time? Call us. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, comparing the new sitcom The Goldbergs to another show called The Goldbergs from decades ago.
Jeff Garlin, who plays the father, says, you know, by calling the show The Goldbergs, you might as well call it The Jews.
How TV portrays Jews then and now. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. We are taking your calls right now and throughout the entire show on the MSU-Notre Dame game that took place Saturday afternoon. Did Coach D'Antonio make the right move in putting in Maxwell? Do you agree with the penalties that were called? And is it time for panic? Call us. Call us. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Right now, I'm joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky to really dive into this game and dissect what they saw throughout that entire game. And I tell you guys, it is certainly frustrating watching this MSU team sometimes on Saturday afternoons, because I tell you what, I see a lot of potential with this football team. When you look at the defensive end, I mean, they have the number one ranked defense coming into that Notre Dame game in the nation. Unbelievable defensively. But when you look at the offensive end, there are so many question marks. And throughout that one, I got to get some stuff off my chest. First of all, I thought that Connor Cook had a decent game. He had a decent game. Not good, not great, not terrible. He played average the entire game, which is something that, if you look at those first few games at the beginning of the season, is a positive note, to say the least. Connor Cook, I thought he managed the game very well. And, you know, of course, there were a lot of three and outs. There were some miscues here and there. I mean, there were some overthrows, let's be honest here. But looking at the bigger picture and comparing his play to what we've seen those first few games, I thought Connor played decent. On the defensive end, if you look at those pass interference calls, specifically on those pass interference calls. Now, granted, there were other penalties that really cost MSU, like the Mekhijah Reynolds face mask. If you remember early on, that, you know, early on they give up that 15-yard penalty, and then, you know, Notre Dame goes on, I believe, to go and either, I think it was a touchdown or a field goal on that drive. But they still gave up points nonetheless. You can't give up penalties like that. But on Trey Wayans, throughout each and every one of his pass interference calls, I thought they were bogus calls, if you ask me. I thought Trey did one heck of a job, and it really, when you look at that whole, you got a feel for that. I started feeling for the guy, because especially on that third one where the ball was underthrown in the end zone, and Trey is clearly playing the ball, and the receiver jumps over his back to try and get the ball or knock it out of Trey's way, and they call a pass interference call on his way. I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. That's frustrating as a defense to go through something like that. But overall, I really question this coaching staff for MSU when it boils down. And MSU, when they get to the red zone, guys, when they get to the red zone, you cannot walk away from the red zone with 3 points each and every time against premier teams like Notre Dame. You're not going to win in this country doing that. And I have to really harp on the play calling, though, because, I mean, there were some plays that were called in that situation where you just look at it and say, you just scratch your head like, what was that? You know, and, you know, this is something that's been a problem all season for MSU. And it's been a problem during the later games of last season for MSU when it comes down to play calling. I thought they were bad decisions. I don't know. We have a caller on line one. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Yeah, Rick from Grand Rapids.
How you doing, Rick? Welcome to the show.
All right. Well, yeah. No, we should all be blaming the defense for that loss because they didn't score one or two touchdowns that game.
That's sarcasm, right, Rick?
Yeah. I thought it was horrible
nice
to change quarterbacks. And now we see once again why Andrew Maxwell is not what we thought he would be. Anybody with a 4th and 20 that starts to run doesn't even throw it down doesn't even give it a chance. And another thing, I don't know if it's that receiver dropped a couple. Cook, he's average. Mm-hmm. He's close to average, maybe. I'm looking forward to the freshman next year or the other guy. But it's just so frustrating. The defense does their job. The penalties, yeah, a couple of them probably were not right, and a couple other ones questionable. But if you know what they're going to call, you've got to change how you're defending, I suppose, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't know. It's just very frustrating to have one of the worst offenses in the in the country. Pass offense has got to be the lower 10%. And then Brian Kelly talking about that he was so proud of his defense because they stepped up against what? What do you have?
I think my grandma could have did a good job against that MSU offense, right?
Yeah, and then why didn't what was wrong with Langford? He did pretty well in the first quarter and a half, and then you didn't see him again until the second half.
Right.
I don't know. Sometimes I think D'Antonio is too loyal and too stubborn, and he's done a lot. It's been good. He's been a right fit for us, but we got to open stuff up a little bit. This is not football of the George Crow's days. You know, it's just frustrating. I'm speaking for all Spartan fans, very frustrating. But
I'm sure you are. Yeah. I got to ask you, Rick, do you think if D'Antonio, just imagine, if they lose the Iowa game, do you think that D'Antonio has one more year left here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, for all he's done, I think sometimes we forget what we had the last couple of years when Kirk Cousins in. We had good wide receivers, good running game, and the receivers would block when they were running downfield. We don't see that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you really got to go to Notre Dame. I've been there several times, and it's a wonderful place. I know a lot of stadiums around, and they treat you better there than just about any other place, except maybe us. But all right.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rick. Thanks a lot, man.
Listen to the frustration from the rest of us. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Rick is definitely speaking for many Spartan fans out there. But I just had to get that off my chest, guys, for a second. What did you guys see? Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, a lot of the same things. You know, the pass interference calls on Trey Waynes. Every time you watch a game and there's a pass interference call, the thing that the announcers and basically everybody points out is, does the defensive back turn their head and look back at the ball?
Right.
He did it. It was textbook.
Textbook.
And they still get the flags called. It was Denard versus Nebraska last year all over again, pretty much the entire day.
Right.
Some of them were warranted, yeah, but others it just seemed like Kelly would get on the officials, and then the next play they'd call one regardless of what happened and, you know, regardless of what was going on. Cook and Reese, all right, Tommy Reese went 14 of 34.
Yeah.
Cook went 16 of 32. Why are we throwing the ball 32 times in a game if we have a quarterback who we know is not accurate?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It's play calling.
Jeremy Langford averaging 5 yards a carry.
Right.
Stick with it.
Yeah.
Coach D'Antonio, remember when you had Javon Ringer and he was the only player on your offense who was worth anything and would get the ball 30 times a game? We won games. We won 9 games that year. That's what wins you games when you have an elite defense. Run the dang ball.
Exactly.
What are we doing?
I totally agree with you. Ugh. Totally agree with you. Because if you look at that game, and there were some stretches where Langford was playing great.
Yeah, why does Nick Hill get in the game? I know,
right.
You know, they probably had him scheduled to have a drive here, but then he drops the kick, picks it up in the end zone, gets out to, the 6-yard line? It's like, get him out of there.
Exactly.
Langford's running well. Stick with the hot hand. Success on offense has been tough to come by for a year and a half now. When you find it, stick with it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Totally a lot of the same things agreed here. But here's what I don't get. Matt said it perfectly. You have a 5 yards per carry running back, and you're relying on a 16 for 32 quarterback. But the funny thing is when we had a quarterback in Kirk Cousins, we ran the ball with Le'Veon 40 times a game. When we had a quarterback, you don't have a quarterback.
It's like and the opposite. You don't it's a catch run. 22. I don't get it.
You see what I'm saying, though? You don't run when you don't have a quarterback.
It makes no sense.
No sense.
No sense whatsoever. And that MSU coaching staff, they have – there's no excuse to justify that, you know, when you look at it. And we have a caller on line one, Ryan from Bellevue. How you doing, Ryan? Welcome to Current Sports.
Thanks. A couple questions. First of all, wondering what happened to Dave Ellis and the two-minute update on the MSU Spartans site. And I don't watch any pro football, so I don't have any idea. How would they have called those pass interference calls in the pro ranks? Thanks, and I'll listen on the radio.
Thanks a lot for your call, Ryan.
You know, Megan used to do those two-minute updates for a little bit.
She did. I think she still does.
Sometimes. I don't think as much. Sure. I think she has different duties.
I'm not exactly sure on the two-minute updates, though. I'm sorry, Ryan. I don't have any information about that. And the pass interference calls for MSU, though. Trey Wayans, though. I mean, well, first of all, I want to go back because if you look back at last week, and I know me and Matt had this discussion about who would D'Antonio throw in if Connor Cook is having a bad day. And, of course, Matt said that he would put in Andrew Maxwell, which D'Antonio did. He did put in Andrew Maxwell during that game on the final drive. But I tell you what, it's so frustrating because if you're going to do that, first of all, I don't think Connor Cook was having a bad game to take him out the game on that final drive. First of all, I thought that Connor Cook, like I said, we had an average game. Nothing really stood out to where you said, okay, this guy's pretty good or he's great, you know. But he had an average game. It was okay. He had a few passes here and there. He managed the game very well. You go on that last drive with a chance to win the game. And you put in an Andrew Maxwell, who, first of all, throughout the entire week, hasn't had reps with the number one squad. And second of all, hasn't played the entire game up until that moment. I don't get that. I don't get it at all. You know, and when it originally happened, if you remember the series before that, Connor Cook, on a pass play, he had injured his throwing arm. A helmet had hit his hand, and he was kind of laboring on that injury a little bit. And after that, I believe he might have even played a play after that play. I can't remember. But anyway, when that happened, he threw in Andrew Maxwell. I'm sitting there like, okay, the only justifiable reason that I can see him throwing in Andrew Maxwell was that Connor Cook maybe didn't fill up to it and maybe was hurt. But that wasn't the case. That was not the case whatsoever. And D'Antonio decided to throw in Andrew Maxwell, again, who hadn't had reps all day. If you're going to do that, if you look at it, if you're going to put in not even Andrew Maxwell, if you're going to put in Tyler O'Connor or, Damian Terry, if you decide to burn his red shirt and throw him in there, you got to put him in earlier in the game. Put him in a few drives earlier than that so he can get warmed up,
right?
So he can get some reps out there. He threw in a rusty Andrew Maxwell. Andrew goes out there, throws three incomplete passes, and decides that he's Michael Vick on fourth down and decides to take off running. What?
Yeah,
what?
I mean, was there a more quintessential Andrew Maxwell drive than that last drive? Three high fastballs that go incomplete, and then on 4th and 20, instead of throwing it up, just throw a Hail Mary, runs, and even worse, he goes out of bounds to avoid the hit. It's the last play of the game, dude. You're trying to win. You should be sacrificing your body for everything. What are you doing?
I have no idea. Not only does he go out of bounds, he goes out of bounds 10 yards before the first down.
It makes no sense at all. That's what I'm saying. We've squeezed all we can out of the Andrew Maxwell sponge. Stop putting him in the game. That's why I say, come on, man.
Whatever the opposite of a gamer is, it's Andrew Maxwell. I feel bad saying it, but he just doesn't want it. He just doesn't look like he wants it.
He doesn't have the QB instincts that you need to have as a QB. He's great off the field. I mean, he says the right things. He's a real nice kid, but he just doesn't have it. That's why I said, you know, if I looked at the situation, if Connor Cook was playing bad, I would have to go with Tyler O'Connor. I don't know. That's why I said it. But all right, we have Tom from Grand Rapids. How you doing, Tom? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey guys, I'm good. I called you a couple weeks ago when we were having the great who should be the quarterback debate and said we don't have a quarterback problem. We have an offensive coordinator problem.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so now today, can I just say I rest my case?
Yes, you can, Tom.
I just don't even know. I mean, I'm as boggled. We're running the ball effectively. All of a sudden, McHill's in the game. What's happening with Langford? And then we get the ball back with plenty of time in the game, and now we're going to make Mr. Cook Joe Montana. I just don't get it. I mean, I was having flashbacks to John L. Smith running off the field saying the kids are playing their tails off and the coaches are screwing it up.
Right. That's so true.
And I don't for a minute buy this crap that D'Antonio called that play and D'Antonio decided to put Maxwell in. If he did, then we don't have an offensive coordinator problem anymore either. We have a head coach problem. I mean, it's just, it's spiraling out of control.
Right, right. I totally agree, Tom. And, you know, I'm going to have to ask you, just like I asked Ryan, when you look at this, do you, how long, if just to say MSU goes on to lose to Iowa, just worst case scenario, how long do you think D'Antonio has here?
Well, it would, okay, so here's the problem. I think he's stubborn and too loyal for his own good. He constantly uses the refrain, the best player will play, but he very seldom does that. Now he took it out on a field goal kicker this weekend. There's a good idea. But here's my thoughts. I would like to think he would be out of time. Done. We've seen enough. You know, everybody talks about Kirk Cousins' era and all that stuff. That's fine. We did have success when we shouldn't have. But other teams just reload. Look at Ohio State. Kenny Guyton comes on. I won't even know if I'd play him or Braxton Miller this weekend if I'm them. I'd have that kind of a decision. That's tough.
Yeah, that is very tough.
Other teams don't go through these wild cycles. And that coaching staff has had 9 months since the bowl game to put a team on the field and have them do something. And we get nothing.
Right.
Zero.
Right. Totally agree with you, Tom. Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for the call.
See ya. Guys, thank you.
All right. Yeah, I mean, Tom has – he said it perfectly. It's so frustrating watching this team because – and you know what? When you look at it, the defense is so good.
Yeah.
It is so good. I mean, like I said, I mean, coming to that Notre Dame game, the best defense statistically in the nation. And that blows my mind when I think about that. Michigan State, the number one defense in the nation. And then you look at the offense – and the offense is arguably the worst offense in the nation. And it just blows my mind. If there's any positive aspect or any or positive ratio to take away from that game, I thought, like we talked about Jeremy Langford, I thought the running backs did a really good job.
And the O-line, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Without, they opened up holes. I mean, they played really, really well. Really, really well. And if you look at Nick Hill, I remember Nick Hill – I believe on MSU's first touchdown or second touchdown of the game, the first touchdown of the game, I think it was, when he really had that tough, tough run to save that three and out. I'm sitting there like, wow, Nick Hill played his butt off that game. I thought Jeremy Langford had a very good game. But like I said, they didn't stick with him. And it just went in the flames after that. As far as the receivers go, yeah, there were a few drops. But I thought Magiera Kings is a pretty – decent player, I think, for this MSU squad. Magiera Kings has some really, really nice catches. I believe they're using him on kick returns now, I believe, a little bit. But Magiera Kings, he's very athletic. I think he has a good pair of hands on him. I think it was a good move for D'Antonio to really stick with him throughout the game. Benny Fowler, he had moments here, and he had that really good, nice leaping, diving catch. But overall, I don't think Benny got involved until the third quarter. But you know, I'm trying to reach here to try to grasp on some positive things for this MSU offense.
Yeah,
but.
And here's another question to ask. It's obviously the MSU offense is just pitiful. It's pitiful, and Maxwell is probably squeezed out and done with the sponge. So my question is, if Connor Cook stayed in that game and did not win, would the offense still be in question?
Oh yeah. I think so. If Connor Cook stayed in the game and, you know, if Connor Cook did play, let's be honest here, if Connor Cook did play on that final drive, I don't think MSU would have scored. I don't think they would have won the game on the game-winning drive. I'm just, this is a pipe dream here. I'm just trying to foresee. He wasn't outstanding that game, but he wasn't bad. But, I think if you – so you're saying if they did go with Connor Cook.
Yeah, and he lost.
Which is offense still
is,
being questioned.
Is his offense still in question?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, because they didn't do enough throughout that game, if you ask me. And if anything, though, I mean, like Tom said, though, I mean, just some of the play calling. They go away from running the ball and start chucking it down there, and it just leads to three and out after three and out after three and out. I mean – like you say, they took the game out of the kids' hands in certain regards. And you hate to say that, but that's essentially what happened here for this team. Who knows what happens if they stick with the run game? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Tom also said he was talking about wild cycles. And it's weird because it's only happened on one side of the ball.
Right.
The defense does reload. You know, we lose All-American Greg Jones. Plug in Max Bulla. We're even better. You know, we lose Will Golston to the draft. We plug in Shalik Calhoun. He's just as productive. Mm-hmm. We lose Johnny Adams. Darqueze Dennard's right there. Trey Waynes comes up next in line. Yeah. The defense is an assembly line of good players right now. Like, they just produce talent. They all play hard. They know what they're doing. And then you look at the offense, and it's just like a clown show. I don't know what's going on. Nobody has any idea. And I think, you know, there were quotes that said, this feels a lot like last year, but it's better. I disagree. I think it's worse. Last year we had all these close losses where the defense would bend but not break, and then at the end of the game they'd give up a scoring drive. They'd give up a touchdown. Right. Saturday, they stopped Notre Dame with less than 10 minutes left, three separate drives, and the offense still did nothing. I think it's even more troubling than any of the losses last year.
I have to totally echo those sentiments, man. I mean, because if you look at it, last year, I mean, they were – now, they were there on that Notre Dame game. But, I mean, that offense is just so stagnant. I mean, it's so stagnant. At least, last year, they were putting that offense would, somehow make a play here and there to say, okay, they kept them in the game a little bit.
Right.
Now, they're doing nothing. Just three and outs after three and out. I mean, every time, MSU gets the ball and starts a drive, I go to the bathroom and come back, they're punting. I'm like, what is going on here? So it's so frustrating. Again, if you have any thoughts on this MSU football team, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to ask you guys, just like I asked Brian and a few of our callers here, is it time to panic for Spartyland? Is it panic time?
Before the panic time, let's just touch on how great the play calling from Narduzzi was. The corner blitzes, Darqueze Dennard on the fourth. Remember that big fourth down where Dennard came, pressured the quarterback. But in terms of panic, am I panicked on the defensive side of the ball? Absolutely not. I'm only panicked on one side.
So is it panic for this MSU football team?
Not yet. It's one game.
I think, like Alex said, the one side is so good and set in stone and solid. It's just like, I don't know if it's panic time, because really we just need to see marginal improvement. The worry there is that that's the same thing we've been saying for the last 9 months.
That's what I'm saying.
All we need is them to just be marginally better, and we're going to win 10 games. But they haven't gotten any better at all. It seems like they're taking steps backwards. And, last year against Notre Dame, Le'Veon Bell had like 60 yards or something because the offensive line couldn't open up any holes. This year, the offensive line dominated the Notre Dame front seven. They opened holes. There were plays to be made, and then they went away from it. And it just seems like the offensive coaching staff has no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, it's like throwing a no-hitter and losing because of errors or pass interference penalties.
Right, I totally agree with you. And you know what? As far as the quarterback position goes, Connor Cook had an interesting quote afterwards that says that, it was a bit, just to sum it up, to paraphrase it, he's a little bit discouraged that D'Antonio didn't have enough, and the coaching staff didn't have enough confidence for him to come in and play that final drive. And I think that was just a bad move, because it was a bad move to put in Maxwell, because, like you said, I mean, Connor Cook's, you talk about naming him the starting QB, and you don't even give him a chance, in a big game, on a big stage where he wasn't playing awful, and you don't even give him a chance to go out there and possibly save the game. That does not do well for your starting quarterback's confidence at all. And it furthermore puts doubt into, this whole, like you said, clown show that MSU has going as far as the quarterbacks go. I still get the vibe now. If Connor Cook would have finished that game, I would have said, okay, Connor Cook's the man for the rest of the season. But since he didn't, they throw in Maxwell now. It's doubts in my head, as to whether, Connor Cook's still walking on eggshells, to be honest with you,
I think
that's not good for a team that's getting into the meat of its season now.
For sure. I think the bye week here is huge.
Yeah.
They definitely got to regroup. But I think it's good that Cook said that, because it says he wants the job. I don't know if Maxwell would have said anything along those lines if he was in Cook's position, but I'm glad Cook wants it. He's angry. He was upset that he didn't
I
get
will
a
be
shot,
too.
And he should be. Yeah,
because he
didn't play terribly. He had better numbers than Reese. You know, it's not like he was the sole reason we were losing. So
how many
just,
chances have Andrew Maxwell got?
Seriously,
come on.
14
like,
games.
Really?
Worth. Yeah, come and on, then they man. Finally pull the hook. But you know, right in crunch time, we're gonna take you out, Connor. It just seems like a terrible message to send to your quarterback. But I'm glad that he said, "Hey, I'm angry and I want the job."
Right,
because it's good that somebody does.
Because it sorely it challenges that coaching staff, to be honest with you. It's saying, "Hey, I'm ticked off that you did that,
and
that wasn't right."
And it's warranted.
It's definitely warranted. So a lot of questions for this MSU football team. Again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you have any comments on the state of this MSU football team, give us a call. Don't go anywhere because we're gonna take a quick break and then come back. Still lots more to talk about. Again, is it panic time for Sparty fans? 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I hung out with the old folks in the hope that I'd get wise.
On the next Fresh Air, Elton John. He has a new stripped-down solo album produced by T-Bone Burnett with lyrics by Bernie Taupin. It's called The Diving Board. Join us.
In the theater of their eyes.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock.
In the few that still survive.
Welcome back to Current Sports. Again, we are taking your calls on the MSU-Notre Dame game and getting your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. I believe we have a call right now. John from Grand Ledge, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, John?
Okay, I was just calling listening to you guys talk about the quarterback. I understand, you know, what you're saying as far as putting Maxwell in about Connor Cook. Of course, I'll remind you, he had 58 minutes to complete a few more passes. So that situation never would have arose. And the two series before they pulled him, he had guys wide open that either overthrew or underthrew. So I would have went with Maxwell, too, to give him a shot. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But it's just like back a few years ago, these little Giants. When you call a play of your coach and it works, you're a genius. When you put in your senior quarterback and if it doesn't come out, oh, my God, everybody's questioning the coaches.
Now, John, I gotta be honest with you here. I mean, looking at Andrew Maxwell's tenure at MSU last season and all of the overthrows and miscues that he had, and you really, really think that they should have took out Connor Cook still?
Yep.
And when Andrew Maxwell's been given chance, opportunity after opportunity after opportunity.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta shake it up, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Gotcha. All right, John. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, man. Thank you. That's John from Grand Ledge. I don't 58
know. 58 minutes, man. 14 games.
Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense to me when you – because, I mean, like you say, it's a clown show. That's a great word to put it because, I mean, these quarterbacks, we've been talking about this week after week after week for this MSU football team. You finally get a quarterback who can manage an entire game, and you take him out on the game-winning drive. I totally disagree with John on that because, like I said, it sends the wrong message. It sends the wrong message. And you see, and if you're going to do it, John, if you're listening still, if you're going to do it, if you're going to put in Andrew Maxwell, you don't do it on the game-winning drive of a pivotal game like that. You put him in two or three series before that, get the guy warmed up. I mean, come on, the guy was just, you know, probably sipping tea and reading a newspaper on the sidelines. You just throw him in there with really no preparation at all throughout the entire week.
As D'Antonio said,
come on, man.
Maxwell gets his reps on the sideline.
He did say that. Yeah, that's a load of crap.
That's the only place he should be getting his reps.
Exactly.
On the sideline.
We have another caller here. How you doing? Jody, welcome to Current Sports.
Yeah, you know, it made no sense. Putting, let's be honest. You know, we can, you know, you can, we can rant and rave about it all, but it made no sense putting a shell-shocked quarterback into the game at clutch time.
Right.
You know, having played 14 games and then lost his position, this isn't Rocky. This isn't a movie where he's going to come in and all at once lead us to battle, I mean, to glory. I mean, he's shell-shocked because he's had his position taken from him. He's had some other things happen to where, you know, the team may not have followed him. They may have been in Cook's corner. You know, I thought the team played well. Got to score more points. I mean, we can complain about all the pass interferences that were questionable at best. There was two of them I know that I didn't think were pass interference calls, and there were two that might have been some holding. But you can't score 13 points. You can't score 21 points on South Florida. You can't score, you know, one or two touchdowns against Western, you know, and then you beat Youngstown State and it's happy days are here again. No, you got the offense has to get some playmakers. They got to be able to throw the ball downfield.
Right.
I know you guys thought run the ball. They only had 136 yards running. You can't win the game doing that. They have to open things up by putting the ball downfield and not in a halfback pass.
Right.
You throw the ball deep, the safety's back up. Now you can throw in underneath.
Right.
Go ahead,
Jody. I'm sorry.
You know, when safeties are playing up on the line, that's because they don't respect your deep threat.
Right. Totally agree with you. Agree with you, Jody. And you're calling all the way from Canada. Thanks a lot for the call, Jody.
All right. Well, I used to live in Lansing, and I played at State years ago. So I've watched a lot of it, you know, since 75. So I've seen, you know, the program, you know, since, like I say, maybe 1974.
Oh, did you? How many years did you play with the team?
I played 4 years. We were Big Ten champions in 78, but we're on probation. You know, I think the team will go 9-3, you know, which will be a good year. Mm. And it's probably because, you know, no Ohio State, no Wisconsin. But it's a younger kind of team in terms of, you know, offense. You know, you don't have the playmakers, and you got to go out and recruit them. That's all.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Hey, Jody, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, take care now.
You too. Yeah, totally agree with Jody.
Yeah. And
this ain't Rocky.
I mean, even if you're pulling a Notre Dame and just throwing them up deep,
right?
At least make them think we're capable of throwing it that far down the field.
Yeah, and you know what? That's what Notre Dame did throughout the. I'm recollecting now, and you know, Notre Dame, they were taking shots all game, challenging that MSU defense.
All you got to do is hit one of them, and you don't even have to hit them. You can get a flag, and you're still moving the ball down the field.
Right, and that sends a message, you know, that hey, you got to be on your heels because we may just throw a bomb on you. And you know, D'Antonio tried to do it on the. What was the trick play about? Let's talk about the trick play a little bit. What in the world was that? I don't get it. They go from the run game. We go back to that again. They go from the run game and decide to throw this, you know, this flea flicker. With, I believe, who threw it? R.J. Williamson?
R.J. Shelton.
Shelton.
True freshman.
Yeah. Like, I don't get it. And he throws it to Benny Fowler, I believe. Three gold helmets
quadruple,
sitting there.
Quadruple coverage.
Yeah, I mean, why?
It was bad.
I don't get it,
on
man.
First and 10.
Yeah, on first
on a drive,
and 10.
On a drive where you're moving the ball down the field.
Yep.
It's like.
I don't know.
And I know because if it would have worked, yeah, everybody lauds it as a genius call. But at the same time, it's like.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's a terrible call.
Maybe if it's second and two and you can stomach it if it doesn't work out.
Right.
But, I mean.
Not on first down. You just got a fresh set of downs and you're doing craziness like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you're right at midfield.
Yeah. I don't know.
And about Notre Dame taking shots, it almost seemed like they were looking for the pass interferences.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Oh,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Every single ball thrown by Reese was far. It was out of reach
far
of the
out.
Receiver,
yeah.
So they couldn't call it. Every time it's close to the receiver, you get the traditional hands up, hey, man, where's the flag?
Yeah.
It happens every time. And you see
it
in professional, too, where receivers, it's just an expectation. And you look at any other penalty in the game, that's probably the most wanted penalty that's called by any player.
Yeah, I totally – that's a very good point, Alex, because, I mean, like you said, it was they were sending a message by throwing it downfield that, hey, defense, we might get you on one of them. And also, when they're getting these pass interference calls, they're at home, the momentum's their way. So if it even looks remotely to the point where it could be a pass interference call, they're getting a call, and they certainly got the call that day.
Yeah, and it's half the distance to the goal. It's almost like a strategy. You could plan your game around getting pass interferences.
Yeah.
and trying to come up with a great offensive win.
It goes. I pissed. And, you know, I tweeted that day when that was going on. I'm like, hey, man, this reminds me of our conversation we had last week on Current Sports. Our sports rigged.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. All right, well, really quickly, time is certainly flying by. Again, the Lions, they topped the Redskins, guys. They haven't won there in quite some time, ever. I tell you what, the Lions, Joik Bell.
Yeah.
To me, that was the highlight of the day for me, watching Joik Bell out there, a guy who played football at Wayne State University, get his first start, and the guy just has so much heart. He's playing out there, looks like, with a chip on his shoulder every time he gets the ball. He looked really good. That's a really good backup for Reggie Bush, I might say. So what'd you guys think of the game? Did you guys check out the game at all?
Yeah, I think the receivers especially wish that we could play the Redskins every week. Because their defensive
so many
backs
holes. They're
are
so young.
Terrible.
They are so young. And their secondary is so young.
And Ryan Broyles getting big chunk plays and Nate Burleson going over 100 yards. Because, you know, it wasn't just Stafford to Calvin.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Everybody was getting involved. Joseph Fourier getting a touchdown. Yeah. He looks like a player. He's going to be a contributor. Needs to work on the blocking, obviously.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
a
young.
Rookie.
He's young.
But going down the line, he's a red zone threat, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's got 2 touchdowns on the year. But I just think the more people we get involved in the pass game, they're you know, when Bush comes back, you know, knock on wood, hopefully he does and is healthy for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
If he stays healthy and all these other guys start making contributions, they're going to be unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like Saints level when Drew Brees is at his peak, unstoppable. Like. Good luck.
The potential is definitely there. And like I said, and that's something I brought up last week. If there's anything I was looking at the most, is see which receivers would get involved in the pass game more, other than Calvin Johnson. And Nate Burleson answered the bell right off
big
the bat.
Big time. Yep.
He was great. Nate Burleson was great. Matthew Stafford, I thought, you know, other than that interception at the beginning of the game, in the other territory, other than that, I thought Matthew Stafford had a really good game, and he really threaded the needle on that one Calvin Johnson pass. I mean, I've seen Matthew thread the needle, but I've never seen him thread the needle like that.
Yeah,
I mean, that window was really, really
– he makes some plays that just make you shake your head.
Yeah,
that was
one of them.
Terrible decision, but great freaking throw. That was perfect.
It was perfect. So, yeah, if they keep that up, man, they definitely they definitely have a lot of potential as the season goes on. So congrats to the Lions. Von Miller. Von Miller, just a quick update on Von Miller. It's being reported now that Von Miller actually tried to cheat the drug test by getting another sample of urine that was somebody else's replaced with his. He got caught, and that suspension might be a little lengthy for him now. So,
what happened to the Wizinator?
Yeah.
Remember the Wizinator a few years ago? What happened to that? They don't make those anymore?
They don't make those
trade
anymore.
It out for somebody else?
Right. That's what Von Miller tried to do, yeah. And he was in Florida trying to do it. Not the place.
What a shocker. He's in Florida doing something weird.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's
like,
right?
Come on. Oh, boy.
So, yeah, Von Miller, he's definitely in some trouble for that. Also, a current sports fantasy football update for you guys. I ended up beating Aaron, thank goodness, because I'm in last place. Aaron, but granted, he didn't check his fantasy team. Aaron, thanks so much for not checking your fantasy team. He's giving me the thumbs up. So, right now, I'm still in last place, but the updates haven't taken place just yet. DeAndre Carter still in first place. Alex,
no,
you beat DeAndre, though. You beat him. Matt beat Mike, 98-87.
So Matt should be in first. I'll probably be a close second. And
yeah. I'm going to come out of nowhere like
okay,
Batman,
okay.
All right? So
well, you better come out of nowhere with picks.
Yeah, well, pick 'em. Do we have time for Pick'em Mondays yet? I don't think.
Let's do it tomorrow.
Let's do it tomorrow. Pick'em Mondays tomorrow. Guys, how was the weekend though, guys? You guys have a good weekend?
It was intense. Breaking Bad last night was crazy.
Man, Alex, you got to get on Breaking Bad.
I know. I keep hearing it in my ears, man.
They're all on Netflix. You got to check them out. I tell you what, man. I feel bad for Jesse.
Oh, poor Jesse.
Poor Jesse.
That's all you can say to yourself. Just poor Jesse.
And you know, I don't want to give it away for those who haven't watched the show, but yeah, poor Jesse. Hank is dead now, and Walt is living somewhere out in, I don't know where he is. Where, New Hampshire? New Hampshire, that's where Walt is staying. If you haven't checked out Breaking Bad, you got to check it out. The best show on television. It's ending, though. One more episode, right? One more episode, and then bye-bye Breaking Bad. Unbelievable show. All right, well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Brian Calloway for joining me today, sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Thanks to everyone that called in and weighed on the MSU and Notre Dame matchup on Saturday afternoon. A lot of question marks for this MSU football team. We'll see how things go. They get a week off before they take on Iowa in 2 weeks. So, as always, I'm your host, Al Martin. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.